I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless.
Attention! Tonight's movie has been MASH. Follow the zany antics of our combat surgeons as they cut and stitch their way along the front lines operating as bombs and bullets burst around them, snatching laughs and love between amputations and penicillin. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're all about cinematic connections. Each week we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I'm joined by...
Trapper John MD, Brendan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Trapper Brendan, there we go. I'm kind of jealous you claim the Trapper title.
I think Trapper is a better nickname than Hawkeye. Is that a hot take? Nobody wants to be Hawkeye, right?
Well, the Trapper catches the Hawkeye in the wild.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Last week, speaking of the wild, we talked about Last of the Mohicans. And this week, my brain is fried from having just had to read that whole line. What is the connection between Last of the Mohicans and MASH?
It's a character named Hawkeye. It's a Hawkeye connection.
Yes, that was it. Character named Hawkeye. In a war.
In the middle of a war, yeah.
Yeah. We will be talking about MASH, if you did not get that from my opening. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on connections sent in from the listeners, also from the hosts as well. So lots of different ways that we can go next week, having watched MASH, lots of different connections. Talk about MASH the movie, not the TV show. But if you want to watch the MASH TV show, it is probably streaming somewhere. I don't know, Netflix maybe?
Yep. Ran for 7 seasons. It's probably on Hulu. Or I'm sorry, 10 seasons. It ran for 10 seasons. It's probably on Hulu.
Point for Brendan. It is on Hulu. Yes.
Yeah.
11 seasons.
I can't remember
though.
It's 7 or 10, but they
11 seasons.
11 seasons ended in 1983. Was the highest rated television show of all time for a solid 27 years until it was beaten by what, Zach? Do you remember?
I don't know, Survivor? What?
It was not. It was the New Orleans Saints victory in the Super Bowl.
Oh, well, so you can't compare it. I mean,
they did. That's
was there football? Was there football on the MASH TV show like there was in the movie?
I don't know because I haven't watched MASH, but I would imagine so.
All right. Well, we will start talking about the movie soon. But yes, Brendan was right. It is streaming on Hulu. MASH, the movie, unfortunately, last week you said it's on the Criterion channel. And in between us recording and the episode getting posted, I think, Megan the Librarian let us know this, that it was taken off of Criterion channel.
Yeah, so. Which is a shame because I definitely looked for it there. And I did spend, you know, the $4.99 or whatever to rent it on Amazon. Luckily, I, you know, was able to watch it 1.5 times in the time that I rented it. So okay. I didn't mind it too much. It was $5 well spent, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you drop $5 every week or so, it's, you know, that's
not too bad.
That's all right. I don't know. I think as long as you're getting something out of it and you're getting, you know, it's I was actually listening to them talk about like streaming services and having to pay for rentals on a different podcast. And they're saying, you know, back when we were growing up, you had to pay $3.50 to rent a movie, like, and now most
on
movies you can see, most movies, or from Blockbuster or Hollywood Video, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Or Video
it's
One.
Not that different. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not that different.
All right, so here's a question for you, Brendan, as I have the MASH TV show Wikipedia page up.
Okay.
Over under 275 episodes for MASH the TV show.
Over.
Under. 256.
Bummer. Yeah. So close. Okay.
Starring Alan Alda. That's, I think, the biggest name that was.
Jamie Farr, I believe, was
Jamie
there.
Farr.
Only one actor carried over from the movie, and that is, what was his name? Gary Bergdorf, who played Radar.
Oh, okay. Does he play Radar in both, then?
He plays Radar in both, and he's the only, Gary Bergdorf is the only actor to appear on in both the film and the show as the same character.
Ah. Yeah, Radar, one of the few things I knew about MASH coming in is that there was a weird character named Radar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we will get into MASH. We are not ready for that yet. To close out all of my intro stuff, as always, make sure you submit your feedback, questions, ratings, comments at Ladder Movie on Twitter, themovieladder@gmail.com. Check out The Movie Ladder on Letterboxd, where we do post in our watch list every movie that was suggested as a connection each week. So if you're looking for something to watch. yeah, send in those ratings and feedback once we do pick our movie for next week. Let us know what you think about it. Rewatch it. We'll tell you where you can stream it. All that good stuff. All right. Well, before we dive into MASH, Brandon, I know you're still in the deep south. You're still in South Carolina.
But I don't know. South Carolina, the deep south is just the south, right?
What would be the deep south? Like Florida?
Mississippi. Like Mississippi would be the deep south.
Okay. Yeah. You're like the coastal south.
The coastal south.
All right. Well, during your time in the south, have you, I know you've been watching Jeopardy. Have you been watching any other movies besides MASH?
So I did manage to squeeze in one movie this week, and it was for our Criterion Collection challenge, where we had to find just any comedy on the Criterion channel and watch it this week.
It didn't even have to be on the Criterion channel. Just right, exactly. Any comedy in the Criterion challenge. My choice will also be my best movie of the week as well.
So, yeah, so I'm very excited. So I watched, it was only 90 minutes, and I made an audible at the last second. Originally, I was going to watch something else and decided to audible to the 1964 Beatles movie, A Hard Day's Night. And Zach, I'm incredibly happy with this choice. This movie was a ton of fun. You know, you're following the lads from Liverpool as they embark on a world tour, and they are joined by this elderly chap who is quite clean, who is not Paul's favorite grandfather, but his other grandfather. And it's a very odd, fun movie that mixes a lot of humor and practical jokes from John Paul, George, and Ringo with, you know, all of the early Beatles stuff that you love, like Can't Buy Me Love and A Hard Day's Night. And it's just a lot of fun. It moves really breezily. There's a really cool train scene, so we get our train movie connection in there. I just really, really enjoyed it. I highly recommend people check it out, especially if they like the Beatles. There's some good slapstick humor in there. There's a lot of wittiness.
It's too bad that you watched it for not this podcast. I mean, it's hard. You know, we only pick one movie a week out of all the ones that we're suggesting.
Right, of course.
But it was suggested in both episode 33 and episode 63 by Olin.
Yep. Yeah. And he called me out on that on Twitter when I said, why didn't anybody tell me how great Hard Day's Night was? And he said, I told you, I may have even told you twice. And he did.
He even said in his comments on the Doors episode 33, he said, following a day in the life of the British supergroup in their early days as they prepare for a live TV performance. And I quote, great breezy comedy, which I think is what you just said.
It's exactly what I just said. And I loved it. And apologies to Olin for forgetting that he had mentioned it. I think the other thing that I realized, one of the reasons in the back of my head that I switched it to that, I had forgotten until the scene came up in the movie, but Film Spotting recently did a Film Spotting Massacre where they took a scene from this movie, and it was one of the funnier massacre theaters that they've done, where they pretend to be characters from the movie, and people have to send in suggestions of what, or guesses as to what movie it's from. So that, I think that's what reminded me of it. And I was like, oh crap. Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Highly recommend it. What about you? What did you do this week?
What about Bob? Let's see. So I didn't watch as many movies as I usually do. Well, I've been a little slacking lately. But I did watch a couple. And my best movie of the week was not Superman 3, although I did watch Superman 3 this week. looking forward to Superman 4, because I hear it's even worse. But I will also go with my Criterion Challenge movie that I watched for the week. So we had to watch a comedy, and I was looking through the list of comedies on Criterion Collection, and I saw what is called the greatest comedy of all time, and I figured, well, I mean, that I'm going to pick a comedy, might as well pick that. So I watched Some Like It Hot from 1959, Billy Wilder, and starring Tony Curtis, Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, and I loved it. I thought it was really great. Greatest comedy of all time, kind of a high bar to clear. Don't know if it quite did that, although I'm sure, you know, comedy, as we will talk about, comedy ages differently.
Comedy
it's very
is
hard
subjective,
for,
and yeah.
And it's very hard for a movie from 1959 to crack you up like a modern comedy would, because what we find funny changes, and what we expect, also what we expect changes, right? And I can see the fingerprints of Some Like It Hot all over lots of different movies that have come out after it, specifically one of my favorites, Wedding Crashers. I kept thinking about Wedding Crashers as I was watching this movie. Obviously, they are in two different bars, but this did set the template for a lot of comedies in the future. And yeah, I thought the leads were all really dynamic. And, you know, Marilyn Monroe, I mean, I'm familiar with the legend of Marilyn Monroe. I don't know if I've ever really seen her in anything besides clips like over the, where she's standing over the grate, or, you know, singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. And like, I don't even know if I've seen the original of that or just like parodies of that. Mm-hmm. But Marilyn Monroe lived up to all of the hype of like the charisma and the appeal that I've heard about her.
And honestly, it's her best performance, in my opinion, of her films. For sure.
Yeah, it did make me want to watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which has also come up on this podcast before, because I know that's her other really big role. And I think at some point I will see that. So, and great. Actually, you know, connecting to MASH, there were a lot of really great running jokes throughout this movie. Yeah. And it was just very well written as well. And, you know, when I watch comedies, I do not watch comedies with captions on. Because I think it, you know, definitely spoils, but I watch non-comedies with captions on. But I would be interested in rewatching this with captions on, because I'm sure there's little things that were in the dialogue that I didn't pick up on. Again, connecting it to MASH is what we'll talk about soon.
To connect it to MASH even further. So when MASH came out, the Hollywood Reporter's review called MASH the greatest American comedy since Some Like It Hot.
Oh, wow.
So, I was really hoping this would be the one you wanted to talk about, because boom, there's your MASH connection right now.
Yeah.
Right there.
I think I would rate Some Like It Hot better in terms of how funny it was, and also what I would just enjoyment as well.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Not to get too ahead of what we're going to be talking about shortly, but yeah. No, so bold take. I'm going to recommend Some Like It Hot if you've never seen it. Also, Tony Curtis, Jamie Lee Curtis's father.
Who knew?
And, mm-hmm. I mean, apparently everybody except me, but Janet Lee, Jamie Lee Curtis's mother,
mm-hmm.
did not know either. So
never put that together.
No. This week on the Criterion Challenge, we just have to watch any movie that is on the Criterion channel. Have you thought at all? I mean, I know, you know, we will talk about what we're going to be watching. Have you thought at all about what you're going to watch that's on the channel?
I've been thinking about ways to narrow it down, and Megan the Librarian, a great listener, suggested that I just narrow it down to a single director and pick a film. Mm. She suggested the film, looking at the films of Ingmar Bergman that are on there. I have seen Seventh Seal earlier this year for the challenge, so I don't know if I want to go back to another Bergman, but I like the idea of picking a director out of a hat and just going with a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the way I go, is picking an older director like a Billy Wilder or a, who knows, out of a hat and seeing where it goes. Like a Henry Fonda or a John Ford or, you know,
who knows. Going Western route. Yeah, I have a couple ideas of where I want to go. I'm thinking maybe there's a Wong Kar-wai movie called Fallen Angels that my brother loves. Okay. Thinking about maybe that one. There's also Duck, You Sucker, which is the spiritual sequel to Once Upon a Time in the West by Sergio Leone. I saw that was on there.
Once Upon a Time in the West in there?
It is not. I just looked. It is not on the Criterion channel. Because I was going to say, you could finally watch that.
You're begging me to watch that.
And yeah, but you also, I mean, you know.
There's a million probably, other movies.
So. There's also probably a podcast that could come with that. But yeah. You know, hopefully whatever you choose does not leave the Criterion channel between now and this weekend.
I hope not. Well, yeah. I'm flying back to DC tomorrow, so I'll settle into something on Friday, I hope. So
nice. All right. Well, speaking of movies that recently left the Criterion channel, all kinds of connections in this opening to MASH. But let's talk about the 1970 movie MASH, Robert Altman, written and directed. Mm-hmm. I believe he wrote, as I'm saying written, I'm like, he did not write it. He just directed it. And obviously spawned a very successful TV show that we talked about. This came out before the TV show. This is about the medical MASH unit in the Korean War and just a bunch of hijinks that ensue. We're watching really kind of like different episodes is really how this felt to me. Broken up by the announcement, either music or the announcer over the loudspeaker, really separating each story into its own episode. Mm-hmm. And I realized as I was watching it the first time that I was like, oh, like each, you know, there's There's the story about Frank and Hot Lips, and there's the story about the football game, the story about going to Japan, and so I did not give any kind of spoiler warning. I think I skipped over that when I was entering. We will be spoiling MASH. So if you've not seen it, you have to rent it for now. Maybe it'll be somewhere. So you can either pause this podcast, go watch the movie, rent it, come back, or skip ahead to the time in the description for this podcast, and you will have our you can listen to us discuss what we're going to be watching next week as we do our ladder discussion and choice. All right. Now, Reason, what were you going to say?
Now we're going to go back to the part where we just keep talking over each other, because that's what the first 20 minutes of this movie are. Is just that is episode one, is a bunch of characters in a room setting the scene for you of the chaos of this MASH unit. And sort of trying to, there's lots of little jokes and little bits of comedy. And then you sort of devolve into the second line, which is what you were talking about, which is the Robert Duvall and Hot Lips story. And then, you know.
I think there's one story before then. Because actually Hot Lips and Frank is not until almost an hour into this movie. So, I mean, it's interesting because, so I watched this twice, and the first time I watched it, I thought it was okay. The second time, I liked it much better. The second time, I watched it with captions on, which is helpful with a Robert Altman movie. As Brendan said, there's lots of overlapping audio, lots of mumbling. I don't like to watch comedies with captions on, but, you know, for the second time, I thought it was fine, and I caught a lot more of the well-written lines the second time. And the second time I watched it, I was really looking for those episodes, and I was kind of noticing the breaks and how there's that loudspeaker, and they do a shot of the loudspeaker, and you either hear somebody talking or you hear music.
And it's Radar, right? Radar is the guy on the loudspeaker, is he not?
Oh, I did not pick up on
the PR announcer,
But you're right that the overlapping audio really only lasts for the first couple quote-unquote episodes, and...
Yeah.
And I just watched Nashville recently, which has the same thing. And that was my first time watching a Robert Altman movie. And so I didn't realize that was kind of his style. So it's interesting that talking, and there's even a clip I tweeted out from the letter from the Movie Ladder account today. And it's just all these characters sitting around a table, and it just says everybody talking over each other.
Yeah.
and it's like a perfect image for this movie. So, yes, we will try not to talk over each other too much tonight.
Not too much. It depends how much the internet is lagging. So
yes. did you have a favorite kind of episode?
Yeah, I did. I think there were a couple of different ones that really stood out to me that I really, really liked. So I really, really liked the trip to Japan with spending some key time with Trevor John and with Hawkeye and towards the end of the film. And I thought the film was getting a little long in the tooth by the time it was over, and thought maybe that was the final act, but then we get the football scene after. But I really enjoyed the time they spent there, and I really like the dynamic between those two characters throughout the movie, from their first meeting in the tent and their sort of bond over martinis and their instant brotherhood, to just them, you know, realizing that they're going to have this lifelong friendship and respect for each other and instant trust in each other, that they're both brilliant at what they do. So therefore they can sort of push the boundaries of what's acceptable because they trust each other.
Because they're such good doctors.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, not saying it's right, not justifying it, but you understand their trust in each other pushing those boundaries, because they show up to crack a kid's chest open in Hawaiian shirts and cargo shorts.
And asking for steaks. And, you know, I think what I wasn't expecting with this movie, I didn't know what to expect. And this was not what I expected at all. Yeah. I did not think that this was going to be a bunch of jackasses. Like, jackasses especially my first watch, they were, like, mean-spirited jackasses as well. And a lot of the comedy in this has aged very poorly.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the stories, I mean, I would say probably the story that I thought was the best was the Hot Lips and Frank episode.
Yeah, that was my second favorite.
But I liked... I liked the story that I told, but I liked how it was directed, but it's just like, as I was watching it, I was just kind of cringing at just like how shitty they were.
Even that whole thing pushes a line. Like, the beginning of that setup is really good, where, you know, you get the whole thing of Tracker John and Frank not liking each other, and Tracker John just punching him in the storage room, but hurting his own hand when he does it, which I found, like, that was, like, my, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if that was improv, because it was, like, it's such a weird thing to have happen in a movie, where he's, like, legitimately, like, oh, my hand, it was just, like, it was very odd, and a lot of this movie is very odd, but I wondered if maybe he, maybe not improv, but maybe he, like, Elliot Gould actually hurt his hand when he did that, it's and he wasn't possible. Expecting they just caught it on camera.
Because he also does very much sound like Elliot Gould when he's like, oh, God, damn it.
Elliot Gould, his, I don't know if him or Donald Sutherland had a better voice in this, but both of their voices were great. I really liked both of their performances a lot. Their characters obviously were assholes, but I just think, like, requisite, like, we don't endorse what they did throughout this movie.
Right.
Many of the things. And it does take away for me for some of the humor, and especially on my first watch, I just felt a lot of it was mean-spirited.
Yeah.
On the second watch, though, I was able to appreciate some of the writing and some of the jokes, and I tried to write down some of the, like, funny quips that I didn't catch the first time that really the captions helped illuminate for me. I also really liked in that Hot Lips and Frank episode, there's one line where they say, over the loudspeaker, I guess it's radar, says blood and fluid replacement is going to be in the mess hall.
Like, yeah, and then it's Tom Skerritt opening a case of PBR and handing it out to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, blood and fluid replacement. I get it. It's hilarious. Yeah. Like, I really like that. And that's, like, the one likable moment from the Tom Skerritt character before it's just all downhill.
His character was very weird because I feel like he's in... So his character's name is it Ford?
It's Duke Forrest. Yeah, Captain Duke Forrest.
Captain Duke Forrest. Yeah. I feel like he's in the movie a lot until Trapper John shows up, and then he just kind of fades into the background. Because he's really Hawkeye's, like, buddy and roommate to start.
They steal the Jeep together at the beginning, and then they get to take it off together at the end, which is a great button.
Nice book,
like, that's. Yeah. I loved that as a bookend to this film. I mean, not to jump all the way to the end, but I thought the whole setup gag of him stealing the Jeep and then the colonel coming out and being like, you know, where'd you get that? You know, I heard you stole a Jeep, but he's like, no, the Jeep's right there. And he's like, all right, I'm going to have to change the tags on that Jeep.
Yeah, that was Radar, I think, who said that, right?
Yeah.
I really actually love the dynamic between, and I think we're really jumping all over the place, but I think that's fine for this movie.
And that's fine for comedy, yeah.
Yeah, the chemistry between Radar and Blake?
The colonel?
Lieutenant. Yeah. Like, that they're constantly talking at the same time, saying the exact same thing in two different ways. Like, the movie even starts with that, where, after the theme song, but it opens with Radar and Blake talking over each other as Hawkeye is arriving. And they're both saying the exact same thing in just in two different ways. And I don't know. I just thought that was such a funny through line. And that happens a lot throughout this movie. And there's a lot of really good through lines that happen joke wise throughout this movie. Yeah. And a lot of jokes that I, in addition to some that like I said, didn't age well, there were also a lot of jokes that I wasn't sure if they went over my head, if they were meant to be jokes.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll ask you some of those, and you can tell me, did I miss the joke? Is there a joke there? Is it not a joke? Is it not funny? I don't know. But I was like, these are just odd things, but I didn't necessarily find them funny. So.
Yeah. So do you agree that a man can't savor his martini without olives?
Yeah, the olives are my favorite part of the martini.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And also, you need a little bit of olive juice in there, too.
Yeah. I do love that. Yeah, Trapper John just shows up with a jar of olives for
like,
whatever.
I got this.
Yeah. There's a lot of drinking in this movie. Every episode has lots of drinking, which makes sense. They're, in addition to being assholes, they're just drinking all the, like, they're drinking and then they're operating. And the way that the surgery is presented in this is interesting too, because it's very bloody, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, it's very rough, I guess, is the way I would describe it. Like, they even call Trapper John, they call him a chest cracker, which I've never heard any, I've never heard anybody referred to as a chest cracker.
Yeah, it's a heart surgeon.
Yeah. Right. Which, exactly. A heart surgeon. Or, you know, they talk about, who else they say, and I had it written down, like a rib cutter, I think was the other thing that they say, like, and they're just
they need a new rib cutter because the old one is broken or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like he demands a new rib cutter if he's going to be working here. And it's all right, I guess we got to get
I figured the rib cutter was a person. I thought there was a person.
It was a piece of equipment. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, just the way that medicine is, it's just very gruesome and raw.
Yeah.
And also, I felt like when I was watching this, I was like, they probably, when they filmed this movie, just kind of were like, put your hands in there and move them around a little bit. Like,
right.
They're not actually doing anything. Like, they're just like, I mean, in the movie, they're supposed to be doing something, but the actors aren't actually doing anything.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing is, like, it's always sort of in these war movies when you see injured soldiers and you see medics, it never really seems like the doctors are all that effective at what they're doing. And so I think it's sort of a send-up of that to a degree where in war movies of the time, you know, there either weren't medics at all in the movies and people just got, you know, blown up and carried away, or the medics were just not effective or were just like miraculous at their jobs without actually doing anything to the person,
which is what these
so that's sort of what this does. It sort of is a send-up of all those films, and you know, throughout the movie they're sending up different films that are mentioned in the film, you know, because every time Radar mentions a movie on the PA system, it's a real movie about the Korean War that came out in the 1950s.
So we have our whole list of connections just from the Radar movies, basically.
Right, but I didn't write any of them down, so I didn't want to.
I wasn't sure if they were real or not. That was one of those where I wasn't sure if the joke, that was one of the jokes that I was like, is this going over my head?
Yeah, the Victor Mature movie is very much real. I looked it up. It's like the Golden Soldier or something like that, with Victor Mature is very much in there. Is a real movie. I looked it up, and so it makes it ironic that the last movie they talk about is, you know, they
is
make
MASH
it
itself.
Is MASH, and make it that this whole thing sort of exists in a meta take up of Hollywood glamorizing war movies, basically.
That's interesting.
Sort of the same way Tropic Thunder does with glamorizing war movies in that film. So you know, not to
makes for a very interesting movie map. Yeah,
not to spoil my movie map, but So
I was so surprised at the end of this movie when the movie that he's announcing is MASH, and then it goes right into the credits and everything like that. I loved it because I was the whole time I'm watching it, especially first, I'm like, what am I going to use as my opening quote for the movie? And then when he does that, I was like trying to type really fast, and I just ended up Googling what the quote was so I could just find it and copy and paste it. But yeah, I was like, oh, sweet. This is probably my favorite intro quote that I've done for a movie that we've covered. Speaking of intros, should we talk about the intro song "Suicide Is Painless"?
Sure. Not a big fan of the song.
Oh, interesting.
I understand the tongue-in-cheek usage of it, trying to sort of be a dark comedy tone to set the to the unsettling nature of a war movie. Mm-hmm. And sort of poke fun at it, but I don't know. I don't really like the idea of joking around about suicide, and that's why I also didn't like the whole thing with the dentist. Like, doubly didn't like that between the, you know, we have to, you know, I think I'm gay, so therefore I have to
kill myself.
First I have to try to get someone to have sex with you, to sex the gay out of you.
Right.
And then when that doesn't work, I guess we have to kill you.
It's a far cry from the way that homosexuality was handled in Brokeback Mountain just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's not great. And, you know, it's even more uncomfortable given that it's vague whether or not he actually is gay and just couldn't get it up for the girl he was trying to seduce at the whorehouse or whatever.
Right.
Or if he really is having these feelings. So, I mean, I'm not sure which is better and which is worse.
Yeah.
For this,
I don't know.
It's not, It's bad either way.
What I do like about this, because I thought the song was interesting. It does set the tone for, like, there's going to be a lot of uncomfortable humor in this. And I don't know if this was more uncomfortable in the 70s or less. I mean, obviously in the 70s, we were a lot less PC and a lot less kind of thinking about the way that this humor would affect people who are seeing the movie.
Right.
And I mean, this movie, you know, racist, sexist, homophobic. I mean, this is... This is a very problematic movie, and it's interesting that it's kind of, especially because of the TV show, is held up as a classic, because it, just watching it, I was like, wow, I can't believe that, you know, just some of the, you know, some of the entire, like, entire episodes are devoted to, we think this guy is gay, or, you know, this is the one black officer, or, you know, or we're going to basically sexually harass the one female lead character in this movie throughout multiple, that one spans multiple episodes.
Yeah,
but what I did,
the point that we, you know, expose her to the entire camp in the shower,
and that, like, that she becomes a whistleblower, and it's a punchline that she's a military whistleblower. Like, it does make just watching it, like,
because her name is Hot Lips, so she's a whistleblower.
Well, because she's called Hot Lips because they put a microphone up when her and Frank, they were both married and were cheating on their significant others, when they were cheating on their significant others. So, like, everybody in this movie is, like, very shitty. And as I was watching this, when you watch movies, especially comedies that don't age, what I'm able to take from these things is, like, these aren't supposed to be shitty characters, and we're watching these characters we're watching are a bunch of assholes, and that's why the first time it was especially felt mean-spirited. The second time I could look past the mean-spiritedness and at least try to appreciate some of the writing, and you know, again, this movie was not made in 2021. This movie was made in 1970.
We've evolved. The Vietnam War.
Our thoughts have evolved since then. So, you know, this is. It's hard because I think that this is a piece of cinematic history that, like, this should not be wiped off of the face, you know, should not be wiped off the face of cinema history, but it does need to be taken in context and in context of how we've evolved in our thinking, I think.
Yeah, and I think discussing it exactly the way we are right now is valuable so that people can see what was going on in the culture at the time that the movie was made. And what, you know, what has changed, and have we evolved past this or not? I mean,
how much of this movie was intended to be like Hawkeye and Trapper John are assholes? Like, they are not respecting their fellow servicemen or the military. So, like, is in character that they would reveal somebody in the shower, or you know, they would try to convince somebody who thinks he's homosexual to pretend to kill himself, or to, like, think he's killing himself, you know, to, like, conversion therapy, essentially. I don't know. But going back to that opening theme, the two things that I really did like about it, one is that it's this, like, happy music over these really depressing and dark lyrics.
Yeah, and it's very similar in tone and taste to, you know, a movie that we watched earlier this year, you know, Monty Python's Life of Brian, and Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
That's a great connection. Yeah,
it very much has that same tone and feel, not to step on all over our latter connections later, but, you know, it definitely did remind me of that in the moment. So I can't say that I love Always Look on the Bright Side of Life and not appreciate on some level Suicide is Painless. So I appreciate what it's trying to do.
It's weird that the song is all about suicide. I mean, I know, and obviously the other thing I really liked about it is that then about halfway through the movie, we get the story about Painless thinking he's committing suicide. So it's a real double entendre. The Suicide and Painless is foreshadowing that we were going to have a story about Painless committing suicide, or thinking he's committing suicide.
And I didn't really put that together at first. It took me a little while to put together that his nickname was Painless, and that was why. Yeah, it was.
I mean, I didn't put it together until we had that episode. And then I put that together. But it's weird that that's what they would choose as the lyrics, because it's not like that's the, you know, that's not in the spot where the football game is, right? That's not the, like, climactic scene of this movie.
Well, what I would say is that the alternate meaning of the song, you have to think about the context of when this movie was made in the during the middle of the Vietnam War in 1970. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was released, you know, in January of 1970, when millions of, you know, thousands of Americans, hundreds of thousands of Americans were being sent over to Vietnam to basically commit suicide and never come home. Mm-hmm. So the government was sending young men over to Vietnam to basically just let themselves die because they weren't going to make it back. And I think that is the commentary that the song is really making, and I can appreciate it on that level for sure. Because I definitely also see a lot of parallels between this movie and the Vietnam War, for sure.
See,
the callousness that the military treated the soldiers in, you know, just sending them off to die and not thinking twice about it.
Yeah, and I read that this movie is, you know, it takes place during the Korean War, but it's really kind of an allegory for the Vietnam War. It was hard for me to connect those dots. So I'd be curious, like, what other ways that you see that this, I mean, outside of, like, they talk about that the characters have been drafted, and it's just kind of, like, seeing the brutality of war, but it's just very minimized, right, where it's like, oh, here's this guy who, like, is on the verge of death because he's got a bullet in him or something blew up on him. And it's just kind of like a punchline, and they're just moving their hands along in this bloody body. And there's no actual attention paid to it. Humanity to it. Yes, exactly.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I think that's because that's how people felt the government was treating the boys that were being sent away and brought back, was that the government didn't care about the people that were dying. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to win a war that nobody knew why they were fighting it.
And so these bodies, these corpses that are showing up on the surgery table are just kind of like pawns in their game that allow them to play golf and allow them to drink martinis and PBRs and harass women and things like that.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Mm. Okay.
Exactly.
That works for me. Okay. I like that. So, I mean, I don't the like other that, thing but I'll I like say, that read on.
The other thing I'll say on a personal note that why it really, really hit home for me as a Vietnam allegory is, I don't remember if I talked about this on the podcast before. I think maybe it came up. So my dad was in Vietnam, and he was a Army Corps medic during Vietnam.
Did not know that.
And he would send tapes home to my grandparents that he would record on a little handheld tape recorder. And I have those somewhere in my mom's house, and I used to listen to them all the time. And the things that he described, like the things that he saw and did, and then also what he and his fellow Army Medic Corps members would do in their downtime, is basically what Hawkeye and Trapper John and the Duke do in this movie. You know, they get into shenanigans, they go out on a boat and drink a bunch of beer and sit on a beach. They play golf. They would do, you know, they would be like, you know, my dad would be like, I luckily got a day off and we could go down to the beach in the free zone and sit on the beach and have some beers. And so and so brought a whole bunch of whatever, you know, pot or whatever. And, you know, sat there and it was a great day, you know, that kind of thing. And so that very much hit home for me as like an allegory for this. Because those downtime things aren't things you get in films about, you know, World War One, World War Two. It's always like about the noble fight.
Right.
In movies about the Civil War or World War One or World War Two, it's always about the nobility of the soldiers fighting the war. You don't really see the downtime of those characters that much. The exception maybe being a little bit in Saving Private Ryan, but not really.
Not much. And that, I mean, nobility is a great way to describe it. There's no nobility in this movie. I don't think there's a single character who's noble in this. Maybe Hot Lips, and I don't even like calling her Hot Lips because I feel like that's like a shitty name that they gave her. But Ahulahan, you know, but even her, I mean, she cheats on her significant other with Frank, right? Like,
and they also turn her into a complete ditz at the end during the football scene.
Yeah, where she's like the cheerleader, basically.
The brainless cheerleader. So,
although you did, like you did say, you thought that part was very funny.
I did think that part was funny, but it's, but it's also like, okay, so you basically just wore her down and made her character compliant in the end with all your shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you broke this character.
Right. I mean, you don't, when she's writing these letters, she's whistleblowing. Yeah. And then the whistleblowing is the thing that I'm just like, you hear about whistleblowing now, and it's taken very seriously. And she's whistleblowing, and it's like, well, how about we play this football game instead of that? And like, you know, we'll get our two troops to, you know, be friendly with each other. And I guess it's a good point to talk about the climactic episode, which is the football game.
You know how to whistleblow, don't you?
No, how?
You put your hot lips together. And
oh no. Anyways, the football game. Yeah. It's just shitty. They shouldn't call her Hot Lips. They should just call Hot Lips for all. Like, I feel like that is like, you know, I could identify with that as like you do something stupid in school and everybody just calls you that for the rest of your life, right? Like, there's probably better examples that I just can't think of them, but like, it's like she's called Hot Lips. It's like the most embarrassing moment of her life until she's in the shower and they rip the tent down and reveal her naked in front of 30 people.
Yeah,
that becomes the most embarrassing moment of her life. Like, it's just,
yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, and then they call her Hot Lips throughout the whole movie.
So that scene was actually removed. The shower scene was removed in the 1973 re-release before the VHS releases. Because they wanted it to be PG for the re-release. So they removed that. They removed a lot of the more graphic shots of bodies. And they also replaced the Suicide is Painless song at the beginning with a song by Ahmad, what was his name? Ahmad Johnson.
The wrestler?
Not the wrestler. I knew you were going to say the wrestler when I said that. Not the wrestler. A composer Ahmad Johnson composed a new intro song for the film for the 1973 re-release.
I do like that the TV show uses the instrumental version of that song.
Yeah.
Because it is like the instrumentals are very good. I like the instrumentals a lot. Yeah. All right. Well, now let's talk about the football game. So the movie ends, basically ends with like a 25-minute football scene.
Yeah. It was like, we don't know how else to end this film. Let's have them have a football game.
Well, and that's what I was really thinking on the second watch is, like, I know they wanted some big, you know, really this is like your season finale of this movie. So they want some big event. And I guess the big football game is that. But for me, it just did not at all land. Like, even on the first watch or on the second watch, I was not at all interested in the football scene.
Yeah, it was absurd. It was absurd.
And it's way too long, and you know what's going to happen. You know that they're going to win in the end. And this isn't a football movie. We do hear sprinklings of football. We hear that General Hammonds is at a football game early on in the movie.
Right.
They mention football. They mention Trapper John's football pass when he played college football. So I'd like that they kind of tease it out throughout. But it's just it's so long, and it's so predictable.
It's too long. Yeah. It's too long. I think they definitely were trying to do some sort of metaphor or allegory of the injuries you sustain in sports being similar to the injuries you can sustain in war, and how, you know, sports, why is sports a noble profession but being a soldier isn't, you know, that kind of thing. It was definitely some sort of allegory they were going for that I just didn't think fully hit home for me.
And there were some good, and I do agree with that. Like, you see, you know, player after playing being carried off on a gurney like you would see in war. And there are, you know, there's like the football plays lining up to like battle plans in the war. I mean, there's a lot of comparisons between football and war. So I understand that.
Yeah.
And I do think it's funny that, you know, in most war movies, you're seeing the like basic training camp montage. And in this, we're seeing the basic training camp montage, but it's to get ready for this stupid football game.
Exactly.
They're gonna have.
Exactly.
So I'd like that. I just think it should have been half the length, maybe. Yeah,
it could have been half the length. Yeah. There were some really funny lines with, you know, as I said, Houlihan and the cheerleaders at the coach on the sidelines, especially when they're like trying to figure out, you know, what it, she has no idea what any of the sounds are that are going on the field. And then, you know, when there's the gunshot and the half, and they, and she goes, oh my God, they shot him. And he's like, yeah, come on.
Like, I did really like when they're like, we have a free kick. And she's like, kick, kick, kick the ball. Like, yeah, there were some good jokes. That was fun. But I think, and what I liked about this movie was the well-written lines, and so much of the football was just like scenes of football, and there's not much talking going on. There, so you're not getting those that many good lines.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, you know, it's fun to watch. It did give me a connection for next week. And there was lots of connections from that, but yeah, it was just when the football game finally ended, I was like, oh, good, all right. And I didn't even know if that was, you know, the end of the movie. And then we just get the, you know, war is over, we're going home kind of epilogue. So do you know, did they ever have a big football game on the TV show?
I have no idea. I think you asked me that earlier. I don't know because I didn't watch it on the TV show. I was three when the show ended. So,
oh, man.
You know, I've maybe seen a little bit of the final episode just, you know, on TV from different TV specials where they show – you know, the greatest finales of TV ever made. And it's
Yeah, I would be interested to go watch the finale of it. I might, I don't know when, at some point I might go and just watch, maybe just watch the finale, maybe watch the premiere, maybe get Michael J. Clarke on the line and watch the pilot and talk about the MASH pilot.
There you go.
Yeah. Do you think it's interesting that this movie became a, like, hit TV show? Watching it,
not just it's one hit weird TV show, movies. But two hit TV shows. Two hit TV shows and one TV show that did not do so well. So Trapper John MD premiered in 1976 and ran for 6 years. It followed a much older version of the character, and they just basically borrowed the name for the show. There was no connection to MASH, but they just borrowed the name for the show and got an actor they really liked who used to be on Bonanza, named Parnell Walker, Parnell Johnson, Parnell Hooper, something like that. The guy that was Adam Cartwright on Bonanza, he was Trapper John on that show. It ran for 6 or 7 years. And then there was also After MASH, which was on for 2 years after MASH ended in 84, 85. It was a spectacular flop. Once MASH ended, nobody wanted to know what happened with After MASH. Like, it just bombed. Nobody watched it. And, you know, there were 106 million people that tuned in to the finale of MASH. So can you imagine how bad After MASH had to be to not garner enough people to even stay on the air for two seasons? You know, it's a shame. But there are a lot of movies that have spawned multiple TV shows. Some of them may come up later during connections, during my connections.
Yeah.
But it's really impressive that, you know, this show had such a hit following, because usually you see TV shows get turned into movies instead of movies getting turned into multiple TV shows.
Not anymore. Now you're seeing it the other way around. It's just that's watching awesome. You know, I thought it was funny. I know the movie was a big hit at the time. It's nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards.
Five Academy Awards. It won for Best Adapted Screenplay for the book it was based on.
Yeah, and it was up for Best Picture. It did not win Best Picture.
Love Story won that year, I believe.
No, Patton won that year, I think.
Did Patton win? Okay.
I believe so. I think when I'm in my quick research of the Oscars from that year. But it's just not one of those movies that I would expect. I mean, even of the movies that we've done this year, I think there's a number of movies that I would expect could have been TV shows. And I think we've even talked about a number of movies that could have been TV shows. Mm-hmm. Whereas this just does not seem like one that would have been a TV show to me.
Especially one that
lasts as long as it did and was as successful as it was.
I think that they wound up with a solid lead actor who didn't want to leave the TV show and was willing to just do whatever in Alan Alda, who is basically, like, you know, a living legend of TV and film now, based off of his work on MASH. And he was, you know, sort of a young up-and-coming actor at the time that he started on MASH and was just like, yeah, I'm down for whatever. And they got a solid group of actors around him and people liked it. And I think people also were hankering for something to laugh about with war, because this was, it also debuted in a post-Vietnam era, you know, or as Vietnam was winding down and people needed something to laugh at,
mm-hmm.
in a way that also helped them cope with the era that was winding down of the Vietnam era.
Yeah. You know? And we have covered movies that take place in the Vietnam era a lot. And I know we're not quite to connections yet, but Shampoo, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Apocalypse Now, all took Tropic Thunder didn't, but Tropic Thunder is obviously like supposed to, supposed to kind of tackle that type of stuff. But, you know, this is at least our fourth movie that takes place during the Vietnam era. I think the first from this year, I believe, though. Unless Sorcerer. I don't remember when Sorcerer was
supposed to take place. I believe that was just in the 80s. Or 70s when it was filmed, but it was not... I don't believe it was an allegory for Vietnam, but at least we didn't talk about it that way.
No, we didn't talk about it that way. But, I mean, it was people going into the dangerous journey into the jungle. So
True.
All right, let's see. I got a couple other notes that I wanted to mention, and then we can maybe get into feedback and see where that takes us. So we talked about the overlapping audio. And it's interesting that it kind of goes away. You know, you still get it a little bit, and we get some other interesting things with the audio. Like, I really like how we get the characters will be talking, and then the what's on screen will be them in surgery, right? Mm-hmm. So that you're not seeing the characters talking anymore, but you're still hearing their conversations, but they're just talking over people, you know, doing this very bloody surgery. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Also, on the audio front, during the Hot Lips and Frank episode, the echo from the PA system, the way it comes through on the audio, it's like a horror movie. And she's so horrified about what's going on. And everything she's saying is echoed immediately after. She's like, no, like, stop, be quiet, like, turn off the light. I just thought that added to such, like, the, like, scary vibe of that. And so I really like that effect.
For sure.
Let's see, what else do I got? I liked that John introduces himself and says, I'll be passing gas for you. That was a line I did not catch the first time, but on the captions I caught that.
Yeah,
and they refer to passing gas a couple times throughout this. So like that is like a fun joke that. And I do like the running through line of Radar when he's, which now I know it's Radar, over the PA system, that he starts giving an announcement and then midway through always has to stop for some reason and like start over again. He's like, disregard that.
It really reminded me of, for any of you who are also Doughboys fans, it really reminded me a lot of Mike Mitchell from the Doughboys, of how, like, sometimes he'll start a story and then give up on it halfway through because he thinks the joke is bad, and then he has to, like, start over.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
It reminded me a lot of that. I really enjoyed all of the PA stuff. The blood and fluid replacement will be taking place in the commander's office, you know. 900, wait, no, scrub that. 1600 or whatever it was. I thought that was great.
We will be collecting urine specimens. Disregard that.
Exactly.
Yom Kippur services will not be on Friday. They will be on Sunday now. Which I thought was funny because, like, obviously Friday is the Jewish Sabbath. So, you know, it's funny to move it to Sunday. And then the last question I had for you. So they are the 4,077th MASH unit. Is the joke supposed to be that they're like 4,000? Like, is that supposed to be a joke? Like, I wasn't sure if that was a joke that went over my head or what. Because they're playing against, like, you know, 325 in the football game. So it's like they're the 4,000th unit. Like, that seems very high.
Yeah, I think it was. I don't know. I feel like it was probably a intentional number, but I don't know what it was an intentional number for. Maybe it was the, I don't know, amount of units in Vietnam at that time. Who knows?
Okay, maybe. It just seems like the 4,000th unit for this war seems super high to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that was the joke that, like, you know, they probably wouldn't even have something in like the quad digits to begin with.
Right. And it's just a commentary on how many people have been sent to war, you know?
Yeah. Or like how shitty they are, right? That they're number 4,000 on the list and that's how bad they are. There were a couple examples of lines or things in this movie where I was like, I don't know if that's the joke that I'm missing or what. Then that was like the perfect example of that. I was like, okay, they're the 4,000th unit, but I don't know if that's the joke. And then the other question I had. So we have Ho-John, who is, I'm assuming he's local Korean boy. And he gets taken to that doctor in the city. Yeah. And the doctor comes out and says that his heart rate is way high and his blood pressure is really high. And I didn't know if that actually was the case, or if the doctor was just like, I got to get
this guy. Oh, no, they drugged him. They drugged him. They 100%
Oh, they drugged him before they went in there?
Correct. They drugged him before they gave him back because they didn't want him to end up having to go, like, immediately be given a gun and be given going to service.
Oh, yeah. I completely missed that. On two watches, I completely missed that. So.
Yeah, they totally drugged him up. Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Okay, so that's why he stays. Yeah. All right. Did you have any other notes before we get into listener feedback?
Not too much. Just so Tom Skerritt without a mustache and this young was pretty unrecognizable to me at first. Like, I didn't really recognize him as Tom Skerritt until much later into the film, probably in the second half. But I feel like he is probably the most despicable character in the film.
I feel like he's barely in the movie. Why do you think he's the most despicable? I mean,
because the whole Hot Lips, all of the Hot Lips stuff is pretty much his idea. Like, he's sort of the instigator for everything that they do to Hot Lips.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the shower scene is all his doing. So, I mean, or mostly his doing. But that's the thing is, like, for as despicable as these characters are, I thought all of the individual performances were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the actual actors are giving really good performances.
I agree.
Yeah, that's the hard part is, like, you know, you can like an actor's performance without having to like the character, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did you prefer Hawkeye or Trapper John?
I'm a Trapper John guy myself.
I thought Elliot Gould was so fun. Like, he really was very funny.
Yeah, I would like to watch it again with the subtitles just to see all of the Trapper John stuff that I probably missed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot.
Especially the golf stuff. Like, the golf scene on top of the helicopter pad was just hilarious.
Yeah, I like that they're like, why are they landing the helicopter when we're trying to play golf?
Come on!
Yeah. No, those two together, are just great, you know, assholes. And Donald Sutherland, I had no idea he was ever this young. Cool too, but Donald Sutherland especially. I only know him as, like, old Donald Sutherland. Even middle-aged Donald Sutherland. But so to see him in this, and, you know, I think there's only one time you actually see his full face without glasses and a hat on as well, and, like, a mask. Lots of masks in this movie,
and it's
too.
During the football scene,
But then in the football scene, he's got a helmet on. So. Yeah.
It's funny because those two together almost got Robert Altman fired from this film because they were not enjoying working with Robert Altman. And in fact wrote several letters of protest to the studio saying how bad of a job Altman was doing, and that basically Altman, you know, Elliot Gould, once he saw the film later, apologized to Robert Altman and worked with Altman a few more times. Donald Sutherland never worked with Altman again.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say they almost got fired because they were assholes in real life and going out and doing bullshit.
They wanted to get Altman fired. They were like, yeah, this guy, this kid, this new kid on the block, who does he think he is? He doesn't know what he's doing, you know?
And we do get, you know, we get a lot of characters that kind of come in for one episode, two episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, we have Robert Duvall as Frank. Yeah. We have Painless, and then, you know, we also have at the end of the movie, Spear Chucker as well.
Fred Williamson is the actor's name.
When we got later on in the cast, they went very fast through the credits at the end of the movie.
Yeah. So who I mostly know, he was one of the guys in the bar in the middle part of Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn.
Didn't realize that.
That's where I know Fred Williamson from. He gets spoiler alert, he gets turned into a vampire, and it's very fun.
He's also in a movie called The Inglorious Bastards, but it is not Inglorious Bastards.
Our Inglorious Bastards. Fair. He's a really well known, you know, that guy throughout the 80s and 90s and 70s.
He was in a lot of black exploitation films.
A lot of black exploitation stuff. From Dusk Till Dawn is what I mostly know him from.
I don't remember him. It's interesting too. A lot of the people in this movie, you see, like, their birthday. For example, O'Houlihan was born in, like, the '30s, and it's just wild to me because in this, like, she's, you know, this is from 1970, so it's like, but it's like she's born in 1937. Like, she's, like, you know, 80 plus years old now. It's crazy.
Right.
So, all right, well, let's get into listener feedback and see where that takes us. We actually have the return of the voicemail this week. Jim Crumley, so this was his suggestion, and he reminded us. He said, you guys haven't asked for voicemails in a while from the people whose movies get picked, and we just forgot. So if your movie gets picked, feel free to send in your voicemail, or, you know, keep it, like, under, 90 seconds or so, and we'll play it, and, you know, we'll lead off our feedback section with you. So here is Mr. Jim Crumley, who was the one who suggested MASH.
Yeah. Thanks for picking MASH for the movie this week. It was only my second time watching it, but I was surprised by how sophomoric and at times dark it seemed. The darkest part for me was probably the theme song at the beginning. It's surprising that even an instrumental version of a song like that could go on to become the theme song for arguably the most popular sitcom of all time. Another thing that struck me about the movie was they did a good job of showing the insanity that the war drove the doctors to. It didn't really spend much time at looking at things from the patient perspective. Anyway, can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, we didn't talk about that at all. There's nothing from the patient perspective in this
movie. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much nothing. I don't know that a single patient even gets a line other than a groan.
Unless you are talking about the patients who are the football players, but even that, I don't know if even they have.
Not really. Other than grunts and groans, yeah. So, it's really interesting because, usually you never see, you never see this side of war depicted on film very much.
You're seeing the soldiers. I mean, we said patients, but really it's the soldiers, right? You see the soldiers,
only seeing the soldiers, yeah.
Yeah, and these are the guys behind enemy lines, 3 miles away, according to Trapper John. So, all right, let's see. I will read.
Jim gives it a 3.5 out of 5 as his rating.
3.5 out of 5 from Jim. All right, cool. Let's see. Our other feedback next is from Jeff. He says, it's been a long time since he's seen this. The rewatch wasn't nearly as funny as I remembered it being. One thing I didn't remember being annoying was Hawkeye whistling, but it was for me this whole time. And Frank Burns' character was a total waste of time. Really didn't develop him that well, and then he was gone. In spite of those negatives, it's still a decent movie. If you're a fan of the TV show, the movie comes up a bit flat because you really don't get to know and love the characters as much. That's a good perspective that we don't have. So he gives it a 3. So
And that's a good point. I mean, most of the characters on the show are the same characters, just played by different actors.
Mm. So there is a Hawkeye and Trapper John and all that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a Hawkeye and a Trapper John and a Colonel Blake and Radar is still played by Radar, but there's a Hot Lips Houlihan, and they're all, different characters on this war sitcom instead of being played by these actors in the film.
And actually, as I was watching this both times, I noticed the characters might not be that well developed, but they are really interesting character archetypes, right? That we see in a lot of, when I was watching this, I kept thinking of like college movies and camp movies, like not just war films. I'm thinking of like the raunchy 80s college movies, for example, or the, the camp movies of the 90s. And you have like each of these characters, right? You have like the two, lead assholes, the Zach Morrises, the main kind of anti-hero protagonist type guys, but then you have the super strict rule followers, you have the weirdo who works with the computers,
you have the one friend who always takes things way too far in the Tom Skerritt character, and
exactly. So you have like some very interesting archetypes that set the template for these type of comedies in the future. I don't know if that existed before MASH, those type of characters or not. Nothing comes to mind for me though.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I did not notice Hawkeye whistling. Did you?
Was what?
I didn't notice Hawkeye whistling at all. Did you?
I didn't notice it at all. I noticed him do it a little around Hot Lips when he gives her the name, but I didn't know.
No.
Wasn't really a thing to me.
Maybe on the third watch I'll pick that up.
Stefan Johnson writes in to say, I definitely laughed. Not a bad accomplishment for a 50-year-old movie. Donald Sutherland, Tom Skerritt, and Robert Duvall are not known for their comedy, but do a great job. I can see why a decade of TV followed this. like anything that is over a decade old, it will have some issues. But overall, the comedy still hits. It's still a 3 out of 5 burst of fun. Mm. There are parts of the comedy that definitely still hit. But yeah, as we said, there's a lot that, you know, age and taste change as you get older and as a film gets older. You know, as you mature and a film matures, the distance between you and the film is probably going to become greater. You know, I think there are movies that we loved in the 90s and 2000s that in 10 years, if we revisit, aren't going to
hold up. Yeah, I don't even think in 10 years. I mean, look at, I'm thinking of like American Pie as a great example, right? Like American Pie, and I can still laugh at that because there are, you know, there's, I remember laughing at it when I was younger, but I think there's a lot of stuff, you know, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't age well.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I think it is hard judging comedies. Comedies just age not great. All right, let me move on to Megan the Librarian. So Megan says, it's fine, meaning the movie, it's fine, I'm assuming. Or maybe she's just saying she's doing fine. Hopefully you're doing better than fine, Megan. Megan says, I get what it's going for, but it hasn't aged terribly well. Tell it from Major O'Houlihan's perspective, and it becomes a harrowing tale of sexual harassment in the military. I prefer a TV show, the TV show, which I guess has some of the same issues, but isn't nearly as extreme, at least in my memory. Speaking of extremes, Donald Sutherland's Canadian accent, eh? I can make this joke because I'm a Canadian. I think I can make that joke as well, and I'm not a Canadian. I love Donald Sutherland's accent in this. It's so distinct. Him and Elliot Gould both have such distinct voices. It really both times carried it for me.
For sure. I thought they both did really well. All right. Olin says, I love Sutherland in particular and Gould. Both were films seem to be black. Sorry. Both Gordis Gould seem to be black canvases to an extent. As wasn't character development, but a need to have them move what was effectively a sketch film along. Yeah, I think that was what we were saying earlier about it feeling episodic. I mean, nothing wrong with that, but not enough laughs. First 30 minutes or so up until Gould punching Duvall was a real slog. The Altman overlapping dialogue became less prominent around this time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, couldn't really get behind two main characters given the appalling behavior to Major Margaret Houlihan. On positive, the football scene was well done. Was done well, like many Woody Allen slapstick scenes. The Last Supper suicide section was also decent. Can't see how it set up the platform for a successful comedy. And think Alan Alda. Oh, can see how it set up the platform for a successful comedy. And think Alan Alda and co. were given more room to work with their characters. Lots else to admire, but not particularly enjoyable. 2 out of 5.
2 out of 5. Megan gave it 3. I don't know if I said her score.
So it's a 3 from Megan and 2 from Olin.
I love the way they shoot the Last Supper scene. I just thought it was it was very interesting. And there was a lot of religion in this movie with Father Mulaney, was it Macaulay?
Yeah. We didn't even talk about Rene Avajuwan being in this film. Who is
Father Mulcahy.
Father Mulcahy. He's such a prominent that guy throughout the 80s and 90s. I mean, he was on a couple of different Star Trek shows. He shows up in a lot of action and drama movies throughout the 80s and 90s. Mm. He's got such a recognizable face. I really like him as an actor.
Interesting. So apparently he was in The Little Mermaid, but I don't see who he played.
See Sebastian the Crab?
No. I don't even see him on the cast list as I'm looking at this, but it comes up as a movie he's in. Oh, there he is. He is Lewis. I don't remember Lewis.
Mm.
Yeah. I thought Father Mulcahy was, you know, he was an interesting character. And I like when he's giving the last rites and they're like, well, that guy's dead. So give the last rites to the guy who's still alive. very dark. Why do you think the overlapping dialogue goes away after about the first half hour?
I think I agree that this film is sort of set up in episodes, so it's sending up different things with each. It's making parodies of different things with each with each segment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it was only meant to be in the first segment it was in.
Mm. I do actually, especially on the rewatch, I liked it better again because I had the captions on, which our friend Mac, when I was talking to him about Altman, and he says it's cheating to watch Altman movies with the captions on the first time you watch them. So that's why I listened to him, and I didn't have the captions on for this also because it was a comedy. But when you're getting introduced to all these characters, it just, the absurdity of it all, everybody talking over each other really kind of does hammer home that point. And it's weird. You don't necessarily see a director go away from a style like that just a third of the way through the movie like that does. Mm-hmm. But all right. So what does that give us for listener average?
So we are at a 2.9 from the listeners.
2.9 for the listeners. All right.
So let's see if that goes up or down based on our own ratings.
It does seem like our listeners, I mean, everybody's between a 2 and a 3.5.
Yeah, exactly. Like, mostly we're hovering right around a 3 for everybody on this one.
Yeah. So I think after my first watch, I would have been closer to 2.5, which is what I gave the movie last week. I think I like this better than the movie last week, so I would have bumped it up to a 3. And I'm probably like a 3.25, so I'm going to give it a 3.5. Just because I do think some of the writing was really good and the style, it felt mean-spirited. So it's just hard to give it too high of a rating. And even 3.5 is a little bit higher than I would probably give it, but I did just appreciate it on the second watch. And I think the chemistry between Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland is so good that it does give it kind of a half star just for that.
Yeah, overall, I agree with you, and I am pretty much there with most everything you and the listeners have said as far as the issues with the film, but the things that we thought were really strong. Like, I mean, I thought all of the acting was really on point. I thought some of the specific scene settings were really, really well done. I thought some of the jokes still held up and were good. But yeah, a lot of the mean-spiritedness was unnecessary, and there's a reason I think that the film was probably more popular after some of that stuff was taken out for the re-release that was done in 1973 to make it closer to a PG movie.
Did they cut half the football out too for that re-release?
I wish they had. But yeah, I'm gonna actually stay lower than you. I came in thinking I was right around a 3. And I think I'm going to give this the same thing I gave Last of the Mohicans last week. And I'm going to land on a 3. And that's going to give us a 3.13 overall, which we're going to make a 3 for Letterboxd
purposes. Yeah. And I think that's probably about right. I'm hovering between that 3 and that 3.5. I think that if I went back and looked at movies I've given a 3.5 to, I might bump this a little bit down. But I do think it did some interesting things well. Again, you know, for the time that it came out, it's interesting. And, you know, maybe if I got some of the jokes that went over my head, I would give it even, you know, I'd be better.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where I also could see myself on another watch doing what you did and bumping it up to a 3.5. Mm-hmm. But I also don't see making it any higher than that.
This movie definitely benefits from rewatch and captions. It helps a lot because it just, I don't know if it's just me, but there's a lot of mumbling in this and the captions help. So
I think it also doesn't help when half the time the actor's faces are covered. So it makes the dialogue.
Yeah. They're covered a lot and you can't tell who's who or, you know, all of that stuff. So, all right. So let's talk about our connections to last week's movie. So obviously our main connection is a war movie with Hawkeye. Did you have any other connections to Last of the Mohicans?
So obviously there was the general who was sort of a stickler for the rules. Not too many others.
So another one that I have, and this isn't a great connection, but I do think that the nickname Spearchucker is definitely a name that the colonists in Last of the Mohicans would have called some of the Native Americans in that movie.
True.
So, it's not a great connection.
Yeah, not a great slang connection.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, Yeah, I mean, I think we have a war movie with Hawkeye, and this is, yeah. You know, we talked about last week how the French and Indian War is kind of a war that you don't see depicted on TV much or on movies much,
right.
And you can say the same thing about the Korean War.
Yeah, so. I mean, the Korean War is often called the Forgotten War between World War II and Vietnam, because it was shorter, no one really talks about it. Like, there are very few well-known Korean War films, you know. So. All the important films, quote unquote, are about World War One, World War Two, or Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what about connections to other movies that we have covered? I know you mentioned Life of Brian, and that the Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, similar to Suicide is Painless. I would also say the Last Supper scene feels like that could have been right out of Life of Brian. There could have been.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And maybe there even. I'm trying to remember if there was a Last Supper scene in Life of Brian. But I think that also is a good connection. Anything else to other movies we've done this year?
So, Jerry Orbach's character in Dirty Dancing is a doctor. This is a film centering around doctors having to perform medical procedures.
There's also Dr. Bob in Meet the Parents as well.
Yeah, Meet the Parents. And also someone being harassed for being a nurse. In Meet the Parents.
Yep. Oh, good one.
Greg is harassed for being a nurse. Let's see.
We've probably done other movies that have lost for Best Picture. Spartacus, Philadelphia Story, maybe both come to mind as potential.
Brokeback Water lost. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Brokeback Dragon lost.
Yeah.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon lost.
Oh, true. Yeah, those are both good ones.
What else? Way Back, not nominated. Some people would say that's a loss.
Yeah. Let's see. We had a lot of blending of cultures in terms of Always By Maybe, especially blending into Asian cultures, Always By Maybe, Crazy Rich Asians. And let's see. I don't know if I have anything else for this.
Film set in Asia, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Crazy Rich Asians both set in Asia.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I don't think there's any cast connections. I was looking. I don't. I think it's the first movie we've done with Donald Sutherland, I believe.
Yep.
And first with Elliot Gould, also, I believe. Yep.
Our second Tom Skerritt, we had Tom Skerritt in.
We did.
He was the cop in what movie was he in?
Top Gun.
Top Gun. That's right. Yes. No, he was in Top Gun, but then he was also.
Oh, he's in Harold and Maude as well.
Yeah, he was the cop in Harold and Maude. That's what it was. Okay.
And I will say, you know, as we're mentioning right now, as we're mentioning Top Gun and we're getting into connections to season one. Mm-hmm. So I did look. This movie was suggested by Jeff back in episode 32 with the top off of the Top Gun episode as a connection to Tom Skerritt. Military movie was Tom Skerritt. He suggested MASH. So
perfect. There you go.
What do you think? Was this a better connection off of Last of the Mohicans, or would you say this would be a better connection off of Top Gun?
I'm glad we did it when we did it. I think it's a better connection off of Last of the Mohicans with Hawkeye and the Forgotten War. I'm happy we did it now. I'm glad we didn't do it earlier.
Yeah. I think Top Gun being a military movie starring Tom Skerritt could be the connection we take for next week. Would have been a good connection as well, but just wanted to make sure I pointed out Jeff was the original to suggest MASH. So we finally got to one of your connections, Jeff. Finally got to MASH. All right. What do you got for your movie map?
Yeah, so I think the most obvious one is Tropic Thunder.
Oh, I was going to say Apocalypse Now. But
okay. we're basically making a mockery of war and what people do during a war and the bloody sacrifice that's made by a unit of soldiers and it's basically making a parody of what was going on at that time. And I think Tropic Thunder is obviously a comedy about sending up war movies.
Yeah, and a bunch of assholes
doing the exact same
specifically
thing.
About a bunch of assholes being shitty.
Absolutely, and I think MASH is doing the exact same thing. So, obviously, we have the cast connections with Robert Duvall and Napalm in the Morning to Apocalypse Now.
Right. I was going to say, that's why I thought Apocalypse Now, because both movies about Vietnam, both made in the same decade, both made by auteur filmmakers. And you have Robert Duvall in kind of a shorter performance, right? He's on the movie for that long, but he burns bright and hot in both movies. You know, also, like we talked about other Vietnam era movies, so Shampoo and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, also connections. And then we also, again, have the, I mean, again, we're only supposed to pick one, but we do have the connection of a movie that was turned into a TV show, which would be both. Yeah, we have both Fargo and I lost it, but what was the other one that I was going to say?
I had Fargo written down later.
What We Do in the Shadows is the other one.
Yeah.
It was turned into a TV show. So, so, and I, but this is the first movie that was turned into a TV show from this year that we've done.
Good point.
All right. So, and what is our title connection, would you say?
I think we said a Hawkeye in a Forgotten War.
A Hawkeye in a Forgotten War. I like that. It's very artistic.
Yeah.
All right. A Hawkeye, not a hot guy. You know, if you say Hawkeye, it sounds like a hot guy, kind of.
Are we going to get our third Hawkeye movie in a row? I don't know.
Oh, man. Are we doing Age of Ultron next week?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, so that was a 3. That is our overall rating between us and the listeners for this movie. And let's get into our connections to pick our movie for next week. Of course, once we do pick our connection for next week, send us your email, themovieladder@gmail.com. Tweet at us @laddermovie. Follow us on Letterboxd, themovieladder@gmail.com. Send us your feedback, your rating, and your next movie connection off of next week's movie, and maybe it will be chosen for that'd be June 22nd. So, man, we're flying through June.
Yeah, we are flying through June. I can't believe it's already mid-June already.
Well, next week will be mid-June. I was talking about your connection. If you send in your feedback for the June 15th episode. Oh, June 15th, isn't it? That's my brother's birthday is next Tuesday.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe we'll pick a movie that he'd come on as a guest. Maybe it'd be fun for him to spend his birthday on a podcast.
Happy birthday, Aaron.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into our listener connections. Of course, Jeff is leading us off. So we have Donald Sutherland connection for The Italian Job. I'm assuming that's the original Italian Job, not the Clooney.
I think it's the remake, right? Isn't he in the remake?
Mm. I think he's probably in the older one.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Donald Sutherland. I mean, he is sure in the remake. You're right.
Yeah, pretty sure it's the remake.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay. Man, did not even realize. All right. He also suggests Space Cowboys, starring Donald Sutherland, a movie I never got around to, but wanted to see. Mm-hmm. Ocean's 11, starring Elliot Gould, and A Bridge Too Far, also starring Elliot Gould.
Perfect.
So, Stefan's suggestions are Kelly's Heroes, Donald Sutherland in a war film, The Long Goodbye, Elliot Gould and Robert Altman, and Stripes, a war comedy. That's one that I had on my also Rams list, Stripes.
Stripes is on my short list, yeah.
All right, Jim Crumley suggests, for his suggestion, he's going with a war movie based on a book, 1989's Glory. It is about the Civil War, which he said he can't remember us covering a movie about the Civil War. I do not think we have. Like and Last of the Mohicans and MASH, Sally Stevens also sings in Glory. Sally Stevens sings in both Last of the Mohicans and MASH. Did we miss that connection?
Missed it.
Oh, nice. All right. Thank you, Jim. That's he might have even put that in his note last week, and we just totally missed it. All right, and then Olin, movies that Brendan might watch in a year. First one is Don't Look Now from 1973. Donald Sutherland looks to go abroad to get away from his troubles in a country he is based. Next is Private Benjamin. After the treatment of Houlihan in this movie, he'd like to see a film portraying females' experience in the army, and more hopefully a positive one, starring Goldie Hawn. And then finally, Manchurian Candidate from 1962. So the original Manchurian Candidate, heavily linked to the Korean War, is Lawrence Harvey reassimilates after being a prisoner of war. Honorable mention was The Expendables 2, setting up a scene in the image of Da Vinci's Last Supper. However, it was only used in the promotional poster for The Expendables 2 rather than the film. So that's why it's also only an honorable mention. I will also mention that I did see in the cast list that Sylvester Stallone has an uncredited role in MASH. So that's another connection.
I believe he's one of the officers, but during the shower scene, you don't actually spend any time with him.
Oh, okay. Great. Congrats on being in that scene. All right. Megan the Librarian, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, 1970s movie by an acclaimed director, Martin Scorsese. nominated for multiple Oscars, including Ellen Burstyn for Best Actress, adapted into a 70s, 80s TV show. Alice ran from 76 to 85, with one actor from the movie reprising his role in the show.
Ooh. Vic
Tayback as Mel. Wow, that's a lot of connections for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
What a great one.
Next one, Dirty Dozen from 1967, war movie about undisciplined soldiers with a large cast that includes Donald Sutherland. And it is free on YouTube. So, nice. And then finally, Airplane, 1980. IMDb says Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland would call each other Shirley on the set all the time, supposedly referring to Donald Sutherland's wife, Shirley Douglas. We hear this in a scene where they're getting on the helicopter to go to Japan. Links to MASH, to another irreverent comedy starring a Canadian actor, the late, great Leslie Nielsen, that has a famous line involving the name Shirley.
There you go.
Okay. Kyle did not send feedback in, but he did send in Wrist Cutters, a love story, suggesting this one again. Suggestion is Suicide is Painless song. Wrist Cutters is a black comedy about going to purgatory after suicide. And then Mac sent in Brewster McCloud because it was the follow-up to MASH from Robert Altman. McCabe and Miller, also Altman. Grand Illusion because it highlights the absurdities of war. And Don't Look Now because of Donald Sutherland. So,
fantastic.
Yeah. All right. And now we get into our connections. So do you want to go first or second tonight?
So let me go first. I believe you went first last week. So I will go first this week.
All right.
All right. So let's see. So there's a lot of honorable mentions. One that
don't list your honorable mentions because in case any of them are mine.
Yet.
All right.
Just saying, I have a lot of honorable mentions. All right. But my first connection is going to be a comedy about war centering around someone who uses a PA system for their own amusement, and that's Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. I'm going to throw in Volunteers, a war comedy starring Bill Murray and John Candy. I believe it's Bill Murray.
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks and John Candy, sorry. Volunteers, which is a movie for some reason that I always confused a specific scene in it with Joe versus the Volcano.
The could have our connection for the next week, although I just did a podcast about that movie. Aren't they Peace Corps volunteers, though?
They might be Peace Corps volunteers, but...
Yeah. All right. I'm just correcting you before somebody else does.
I thought it was it's a war comedy, isn't it? Yeah, because they end up going to war.
Maybe
I'm mixing up Volunteers and Stripes. I don't know.
Yeah, because you did think Bill Murray was in it. Let's see. Volunteers, 1985. After his rich father refuses to pay his debt, compulsive gambler Lawrence Byrne III joins the Peace Corps to evade angry creditors. In Thailand, he is assigned to build a bridge for local villagers with the help of American as Apple Pie, Washington State grad Tom Tuttle. And all right. Well, they don't realize that the bridge is coveted by the U.S. Army. So there's U.S. Army tie. I don't know if they are actually in the Army themselves.
Anyway, it's a war comedy.
Somewhat.
It's a war parody.
Oh, I mean, it's Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. And I have seen it, but not in a long time. So it would be a good one for me to re-see.
Anyway.
Thanks.
Anyway, so the my next couple ones are going to be films that were turned into more popular TV shows.
Nice.
And the first one is going to be Karate Kid, which became the recently popular Cobra Kai.
Is Cobra Kai more popular than Karate Kid? I am going to challenge you on that. No, I do not think so.
I'm also going to throw in Limitless.
What network is the Limitless TV show on?
Limitless was on CBS for several years.
Yeah.
And Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay, so there you go. But I still think the movie is more popular.
Because Wet Hot American Summer is a parody of camp movies, while MASH was a parody of war movies. So,
I think this movie reminded me, like I said, this reminded me of a camp movie, reminded me of a college movie. Yeah. So I actually really like that connection. I don't know if I will pick it, because I also thought about Good Morning Vietnam, because the logo, the Army logo, is the same that's on the cover for Good Morning Vietnam. So. Yeah. That was one I was thinking of, was not on my list, though. You actually did not list anything on my list. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Let me replace Volunteers.
No, Keep it.
All right, fine.
Yeah, you said it. It's like, you know, fine. It's like when fine, you move fine, a chess fine, piece. Fine. If you touch the piece, you have to move it. And then when
and
you
then
take
I
your
moved away. Off, yeah.
And then when you take your hand off, you're locked in. Although I'm sure that I've replaced him before, so it's probably unfair of me.
Surely you can't be sure.
Surely I can't be serious. All right, so I have three that I definitely want to suggest, and then I got to decide what my fourth is going to be. So the first is a Robert Altman? It's Robert Altman, right?
Yes, Robert Altman. Robert.
We've talked about him. Yeah, Robert Altman.
You're confusing him with Richard Attenborough.
No, I was confusing him with Roger something else.
Corman?
No. Robert Altman movie that's been on my watch list for a while. In the last month, I've watched my first two Altman movies. We could stick with Robert Altman and go with Gosford Park. It is a movie that I got in Red Envelope Netflix way back in the day, and it sat on top of my DVD player for months. And I've started it. I've gotten about 5 minutes in multiple times and never actually watched it. So it would be fun to check that out. The next is this movie reminds me of a college movie about a bunch of assholes. It stars Donald Sutherland. Mm-hmm. So it's funny Donald Sutherland becomes the strict one in Animal House, but I definitely got an Animal House.
It was on my also rams. I knew you were gonna pick it, so I took it off of my list because I figured you were gonna pick it.
And it's interesting because MASH has a connection to your dad, and Animal House was my dad's favorite movie. I remember growing up, Mom would always say Animal House was your dad's favorite movie. So I've seen it not in a while. I'm sure another problematic comedy from the 80s. It's not Revenge of the Nerds. So
Next is
another war movie that beat out MASH for a whole bunch of Academy Awards in 1970. That is Patton.
Yes, so, Patton was on my honorable mentions as well. Good job.
It just seems like way too many connections.
Yeah,
for sure. And then what else do I want to do? So I'm going to go with one I don't think we're going to pick up because I just watched it, but the football scene is so similar to this movie that I think that it would be interesting to do. It's a very funny comedy, aged much better than MASH. That is The Freshman, starring Harold Lloyd. It's a silent movie, so it'll be our first silent movie. So good luck to me figuring out how I would open the movie or the podcast next week. But the football scene at the end, very similar to a football scene in The Freshman. And I thought it was – I would recommend The Freshman. If you've never seen it, it's like an hour and 20 minutes. A very quick watch, very funny. So check that out. All right, what do you got for also-rans?
All right. So as we talked about, Patton was on there. I really thought about Alien.
Yeah, I did too.
It's Tom Skerritt playing a captain. It was right there.
It would be super fun to do an Alien podcast. Yeah.
It would be really fun. The Long Goodbye. Was an Altman one I considered as well. Animal House.
Isn't The Long Goodbye on somebody else's list?
It is. That's what it's it was an also ran for me.
Yeah.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, nurses putting people in straitjackets.
I thought about that as well. Yeah. And she does say this is not a hospital, it's an insane asylum.
Yep, absolutely. Fargo obviously was an also ran. Ghostbusters.
Fargo.
We already did
Fargo.
I know. I was just saying it was worth mentioning.
Is Fargo like the heat of this podcast where we're just going to do the re-Fargo?
And Stargate got turned into three different TV shows just like MASH did. I thought about Stargate.
I have Assholes Playing Sports Connection for Bad News Bears.
Great.
The original Green for Danger, which is a movie that's come up on this podcast before. And I didn't write down what the connection was, but I think it was something like war medics or something. I think it's a surgeons. I think there's it's a mystery involving surgeons, I believe. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which, of course has Donald Sutherland and that GIF that you see on Twitter all the time. Thought about that one. The song My Blue Heaven plays in this movie. So I thought about My Blue Heaven and then also Stripes. Yeah.
I love My Blue Heaven.
I do too. It's just not a good enough connection.
It's not a good enough connection.
The only one I would sub in is I do feel like Bad News Bears is a very good connection. I'm kind of surprised nobody else suggested it, but that's what we got. All right.
All right.
Read off what we got and then let's pick.
All right. So we have The Italian Job, Space Cowboys, Ocean's 11, Bridge Too Far, which also didn't I recommend that last week? I think I did.
Yeah, you did.
Kelly's Heroes, The Long Goodbye, Stripes, Glory, Don't Look Now, Private Benjamin, The Manchurian Candidate, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, The Dirty Dozen, Airplane, Wrist Cutters, A Love Story, Barrister McCloud, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Grand Illusion, Don't Look Now Again, Gosford Park, Animal House, Patton, Freshman, Good Morning Vietnam, Volunteers, Karate Kid, Limitless, and The Wet Hot American Summer. I think this is a really great list.
I like that you moved the from The Freshman to The Wet Hot American Summer. You said Freshman and The Wet Hot American Summer. I like that.
You're welcome.
Yes. All right. I get to go first. I'm going to go with one of yours to start, and it is summertime. Let's go Wet Hot American Summer, because this movie really did remind me of a camp movie. And, you know, there's like, I feel like we could probably map a lot of characters between that movie and MASH.
It was also turned into two different TV shows.
Well, one different TV show.
And one special, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Speaking of specials, are you surprised that nobody suggested the Friends reunion for Elliot Gould Connection?
No. No, I'm not surprised.
Your turn.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go ahead and go with the one of yours. It's really tempting to pick Gosford Park, but I've seen it, and I don't think there's enough there.
Really? It's a murder mystery. How is there not enough to talk about? That's fine.
I don't think it works for us. I do think we would have a really good time talking about Animal House. So if you're gonna pick Wet Hot American Summer, I'm gonna pick the them in college and do Animal House.
Yeah. I mean, we did say, right? We said, you know, or I said that, you know, it's a camp movie, it's a college movie. Yeah. I think that's fitting. I still say everybody should watch The Freshman. It's great. I watched that for the Criterion Challenge for my silent film. All right, let's see. So for my listener pick, I don't know. I really like all of the connections to Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Yeah.
But I just don't know. I mean, we've done so many Scorsese. That's a lesser known Scorsese. Mm. I just watched Manchurian Candidate recently. Let's see. Stripes was on my list, so I feel like I should probably pick Stripes. But I've seen it. What do I want to do? Airplane is good. I did just look up the 1971 Oscars, and Airport was another movie nominated for Best Picture, so that's another connection to Airplane. All right. I'm just going to keep talking my way through this until I figure it out. I'm going to go with Stripes because it was on my list, so I think it makes sense. And, that we can have maybe we'll have an all-comedy final. Yeah. Although, comedies can be sometimes hard to talk about, but that's all right.
Absolutely. This is tough. There are a lot of ones that I want to pick. I kind of do want to go with another Altman, and I kind of want to go with The Long Goodbye. But it's also one of those that I know that I'll get to on the Criterion Challenge eventually, too, probably.
Yeah, but do you want to talk about it is the question.
Right. I also probably am going to want to talk about it. The other one that I'm thought about is Don't Look Now, because it was not just one person but two people said it, and I've heard things about that movie that it's really, really interesting, but I've never seen it.
Can I push you over the edge can I just try to tilt you in one direction a little bit, like a helicopter pedal? Or helicopter pilot.
You want to do McCabe and Mrs. Miller because you want to keep going on.
No. You've never seen Private Benjamin, right?
I've never seen Private Benjamin. No.
So if we are talking about all comedy, Private Benjamin is a comedy.
That's true. Let's go there then. All right.
I know I'm breaking all kinds of unwritten rules.
You are breaking the rules. Yeah. So women in the military, Private Benjamin, Goldie Hawn. So there we go.
I've seen every single one of these movies. I think this is the first time I've had a Final Four where I've seen all four, but that's fine. And how many have you seen? Have you seen Just Not Private Benjamin? Is that the only one that's...
I've seen Just Not Private Benjamin. I've seen all the other ones.
Benjamin.
Multiple times.
Hello, Benjamin.
Stripes I haven't revisited as an adult. I haven't either.
And that's Harold Ramis is in it. Yeah. I don't know if he wrote it. And I think Harold Ramis wrote Animal House as well, didn't he?
I believe he did, yeah. Or at least was on the team, the National Lampoon team that wrote it.
Yeah, I'm just pulling all. I'm just pulling all of these up.
Yeah, I mean, Wet Hot American Summer, I think, is probably still on Netflix. Animal House is probably also.
Private Benjamin is on Hoopla.
Right.
Stripes is nowhere. Stars. Stripes is on Stars.
Oh, okay. Good. So you get it through Stars with Amazon if you have.
Animal House is on Peacock, which means if you have Peacock Premium, there's no ads. If you have Freecock, then you have to deal with ads and maybe some editing. I'm not sure.
You say Freecock?
Yeah, it's like the free version of Peacock. I think that works. And Wet Hot American Summer also on Peacock and Freecock. Also Showtime as well. So,
all right, that's our show. Good night, everybody.
Well, we got to pick though. All right, I would go with any of these. I think all are very good connections. Two military comedies. And two
college and comedies.
I was gonna look up and see.
In the mood?
I mean, the one thing I will say about Wet Hot American Summer is it is summer, and it's a great summer movie. Obviously, summer's in the title.
But the connection is the least strong of the four.
Yeah, Harold Ramis did write both Stripes and Animal House. Yes. Nancy Myers wrote Private Benjamin. Wet Hot American Summer, written by David Wayne and Michael Showalter. I mean, I don't know. I part of me, it says Private Benjamin because you've never seen it. Part of me says Wet Hot American Summer because it's the summertime. Part of me says Animal House because it's such a good connection, or Stripes because it's such a good connection. So I can see arguments for all four.
I kind of want to revisit Stripes.
Okay.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun revisiting Stripes. Especially because I don't think we've talked about Bill Murray much on this podcast.
One big Bill Murray episode that we did.
Well, yeah, but I think we can. I think we would have a really good time talking about Bill Murray and Harold Ramis and that era of comedy. I think if we did Stripes, it'd be great.
Assholes in the military. I don't know if we should make that our title connection. I don't know if I'll put out a podcast that says assholes in the military right around Memorial Day. I don't know if people would like that. Is this only our second Bill Murray after Groundhog Day, or do we do another Bill Murray movie?
I think it is our second major Bill Murray, but yeah.
Bill Murray and Harold Ramis backed. I mean, the movie map next week is like very, very easy. There's really no question. Like, there's not going to be any, I don't think there's going to be any discussion on what the movie map is next week.
Let's flip a coin between our two military choices in Stripes and Private Benjamin, and Stripes is going to be heads, Private Benjamin's going to be tails.
Eventually. And by flip a coin, you mean flip a fidget spinner?
Whatever.
The cursed fidget spinner, as Ben Lumberjack called it?
The curse.
All right. So what did you say was? What was what? Heads was what?
So Stripes is heads, and Benjamin's tails.
All right. Well, we are enlisting next week, Brendan.
We are enlisting.
We are enlisting.
This is going to determine if we have to shave our heads or not.
We are enlisting in a movie from 1981. Not a movie from 1980. So we are going to Stripes next week.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah. Oh, there's a cast list. Another very good cast list. Wow.
We have to shave our heads.
Okay. I don't know if I even want to get into this, but yeah, next week we're going to talk about this cast. This is a great cast. I mean, the cast of Stripes and the cast of Wet Hot American Summer, both very good. And the cast of MASH, very good. And the cast of Animal House, pretty.
Is stellar. Yeah, I mean.
Pretty good.
We get to Kevin Bacon in with Animal House.
Yeah, and Donald Sutherland and Belushi, Tim Matheson. I mean, yeah. And Private Benjamin's cast is Goldie Hawn. Craig T. Nelson. So, and Albert Brooks. Okay, all four of our final contenders. Very, very, very strong final four tonight.
Yep.
But we are watching Stripes next week. It is available on that Star subscription, so hopefully you didn't cancel it or get it from your local library. Or wherever it's streaming in Canada. Why are you laughing at that? You should get it from your local library.
No, I just saw Bill Murray's character's name in Stripes. And it.
Did you think it said Josh Wigler?
No, I thought it said Jeff Winger.
Oh. I just saw that. I thought it was like J-O-W-I. Like, oh, Josh Wigler.
No, I thought it said Jeff Winger, and it's not. I've been watching a lot of Community lately.
So. Oh, you have? Oh, yeah. Look at you. You're community building. All right. Stripes. Next week. We got to think of what our new title connection is. It's not going to be assholes in the military, but something along those lines. it might just be military comedy of dirtbags or something. that.
Military parody. Yeah.
We will see if Stripes aged a little bit better than MASH. I'm excited to get to this. It'll be fun. So
great.
Harold Ramis is great. Love him. And you know what? I mean, I already got a movie in my mind for episode number 77. So.
And if we wind up at Ghostbusters 2, what can you do?
Or Ghostbusters 1. And we very easily could have Private Benjamin again next week.
That's also true. Or Volunteers.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe for different reasons. Or Animal House. I mean, possibilities are
exactly. We can go anywhere.
We'll just have the exact same Final Four next week. That would be amazing.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Stripes. Streaming on Stars. Connection is military comedy. All right, Brendan, what are you going to watch in the next week besides Stripes?
Couple of things. So Loki drops on Disney Plus overnight. Really excited for the first episode of Loki. All the buzz on the internet so far has been positive.
Wait, is it overnight tonight or overnight tomorrow night?
Or tomorrow night. No, okay. It's tonight. Yeah, it's tonight. So it'll be streaming tomorrow morning. Yeah.
I was thinking it was Thursday morning. Okay.
Yeah, Wednesday at midnight would be tonight.
You're right. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. That's how time works. Yep. So yeah, that's how time works. That's how days of the week work. So
not very Loki, excited. Though, the time might be shifty in Loki.
That's a good point. Loki is going to be all over the place. I'm very excited for Loki. That should be fun.
Did you see that they're doing a Lucky Charms promotion and they're doing Loki Charms?
That's hilarious, and I want to buy some. Give them to me now. They'll never catch me, Loki Charms. And also this week, In the Heights is dropping in theaters and on HBO Max.
I don't think things drop at theaters. I think they drop on streaming devices.
Whatever.
They premiere in theaters. They don't drop.
Stop nitpicking my what I'm excited for, sir. I'm very excited for In the Heights. I've never seen it on Broadway, but really excited to check it out. It may be my return to the movie theater this weekend if I decide that's the way I want to go. But, I mean, HBO Max is making it really easy to just sit at home and watch it on their service instead of
going to the theater. Go to the theater.
Who knows? Yeah, but I'll probably go to the theater.
You should go to the theater.
All right. What about you? What are you checking out?
What about Bob? What am I going to watch this week? So, like I said, a couple options for the Criterion Challenge. I still need to watch Superman 4 at some point so I can catch up on that last post-show recaps episode. Yeah. That's kind of a low light, I would say.
For sure.
And I actually watched, I've watched a movie on my personal movie ladder for like the first time in 6 weeks or so. Last night.
It's been a while
for
me too.
Yeah, I watched Barton Fink last night. Finally caught up with that. And tons of ways I could go off of that. I have not decided yet what I want to do. I was thinking I could finally rewatch 7. You know, there's a very clear connection between those two movies.
Yeah,
or,
it's a real fun movie.
I also think like a Coen Brothers movie about Hollywood, you know, very easily could take me to Hail Caesar as well.
Yeah.
I saw that. But
you saw Caesar, right?
Yeah, I saw it. But it was one that I would think I would like better on a rewatch. You know, could go Lebowski. So there's lots of different ways. So I'll probably watch something on my personal movie ladder at some point this week.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm stuck on Amadeus and haven't decided what to watch next from it. So I'll find something eventually for my personal ladder, but it's been a while since I've visited it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just sitting there dormant for me. So it's funny we both got to that point. Yeah. But on the Movie Ladder podcast, we're talking about Stripes next week.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it'll be very fun.
Am I the Bill Murray or the Harold Ramis of the podcast?
I think we had this discussion once before.
We probably did.
I think we did a Groundhog Day. So thank you, Stefan Johnson, for your suggestion. Everybody make sure you get in your feedback on Stripes, themovieladder@gmail.com, @LadderMovie on Twitter, feedback, ratings, next movie connection off of Stripes. And looking forward to talking about that one next week. Brendan, where can people find you and what are you doing these days?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @FidzyBrendan and on Letterboxd @FidzyBrendan. I'll be around. Looking forward to getting together with some post-show recaps patron fans in the D.C. area this weekend at Rock Creek Park.
Nice.
The great Deirdre Lipsicus put together a little get-together. We're going to have a little picnic in the park and hang out. So that's what I'll be doing on Saturday morning. Excited for that.
Oh,
hopefully the weather holds. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll be humid.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're doing it in the morning. You can find me at Rock Creek Park on Saturdays.
And @FitzyBrendan.
Yeah, exactly.
And You find me at BrookCA, and I don't have any fun plans coming up. I mean, besides this podcast. Right. But yeah, you know, find me watching NBA playoffs. That's where you can find me.
There you go.
So, all right, we'll be back next week. Talk about Bill Murray and Harold Ramis going to war.
Popping her fingers and shuffling her feet, singing do I did it dum did do. She looked good,
she looked good,
she looked fine,
looked fine,
looked good,
she looked fine, and I nearly lost my mind
before I